The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right, hello, and happy 420 day. Yes, it's a Monday. I don't usually do shows Mondays, but that may change soon because, well, those of you who came by to see if we're here on this Monday, we are. I've got news for you. It looks like we will finally be moving this program, the live program, to 5 p.m. Eastern. I know we've only been talking about it for about 6 months now. But working with the people at Progressive Voices, who are working with the people at TuneIn, they are ordering the equipment, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks, sometime in there, we'll move the live show to 5 p.m. So we'll be live on Progressive Voices, making it a lot easier, you know, to do open phone segments, because everyone will be listening at the same time. And also making it easier for me to run longer if I want to, because I won't have to worry about getting off the air in time to get a 60-minute packaged version of the show together to upload to Progressive Voices for them to run at 5 o'clock. So now, as long as I just end the live show for Progressive Voices at 5, we can go as long as we want. So anyway, that's coming. That's in the near future. But I figured, you know what? Today, it's Monday. It's 4:20. So, reasons to talk. And I thought it's just another day that I'd be, you know, hanging out at home or watching TV, procrastinating when it comes to tidying my office. Although, those of you eagle-eyed YouTube viewers should be able to see that my desk behind me, which had been a hot mess, is now all cleaned and organized. That's thanks to my daughter, Allison. You should see the other side of the room. We're not quite there yet. So could have cleaned today, but I thought, I'll do a show instead. Now, we will get to the 420 programming coming up for the interview today. Actually, an old friend of the show, a guy named Robert Platschorn, is going to join me. Longtime listeners of the program may recall Bobby Tuna. He's been on with me before. Robert Platschorn holds the distinction of serving the longest federal prison sentence for a nonviolent marijuana offender in American history. He served over 30 years of a 60-year-plus sentence in federal jail. Ridiculous. They wanted to make an example of him. So these days, when he got out of prison, Robert Platschorn formed a new organization called the Silver Tour, in which he goes around to retirement communities educating senior citizens about the benefits of medical marijuana. So anyway, we'll be joined by Robert Platschorn a little later on. And then I'm giving you ample warning here, you YouTubers. When we finish the hour, the regular part of the show, I'm going to end the YouTube segment. And then we're going to segue onto the audio stream only, and I'm going to play DJ for a while. Because, you know, for a long time I've been thinking I need to do a music set of positive songs, because right now we're all in this very weird place, right? So I was thinking, I always have a category of songs, the power of positive singing. So I thought we'd mix in some of those with some, you know, 420 songs, because, hey, it's 420 day. So we'll do a little musical thing after the interview, the talk portion of the program. So we have a new easy way to access the audio stream of this program. You can always get it by going to the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com. But if you just want to pull up the audio stream, NicoleSandlerStream.com will get you there. So again, if you go to NicoleSandlerStream.com, you'll get the audio stream or whatever I'm streaming on this. And when I'm not on live, I usually have the Progressive Voices stream going on there. But that's an easy way to access the stream. Should you ever be out, you know, in the car and want to listen to PV, just NicoleSandlerStream.com and you'll get it. Okay? All right. So, like we do on a normal day, I want to start the show off with something funny. And there's a reason I'm going to play this particular video. I've played a few from this wonderfully talented woman. As you may know, I've been scouring the globe finding talent, funny videos, because, you know, I like to start the show with something funny because things get serious. Although today we're not going to, well, I guess we'll get a little serious. Anyway, so I happened upon this woman's YouTube page. Her name is Shirley Sherbon. I've now learned how is how you pronounce it. And I learned that because she and I had a conversation on Saturday night. Well, it was Saturday night for me. It was Sunday afternoon for her because she's in New Zealand. So today we're sort of combining our quarantine calling with our funny videos. And so we'll start with a video from Shirley Sherbon, just to give you an example, an idea of the amazing talent this woman has. So we'll go from the video into the interview that we taped over the weekend. Got it? Cool. All right. Take it away, Shirley.
Waking up is hard to do. Today has run away from me. Seems perpetually got no time for nothing new, 'cause waking up is hard to do. Remember waking at first light, going to work then coming home at night. Now I'm stuck here, routines are through, and waking up is hard to do. They say that we must stay home to help COVID clear. How time's passed, has it been a year? Can't wait for all this to end. I wonder if I'll struggle to get up at 6 o'clock again. I beg of you, just stay inside. We won't beat this unless we comply. One day we will start anew, then waking will be hard to do. Waking up is hard to do.
Joining us on the line is Shirley I'm going to pronounce your name wrong. How do you pronounce your last name?
Officially Sherbon.
Sherbon. Because you have the S with the, I feel so ignorant, with the little thing on the bottom.
It's called a cedilla.
A cedilla.
And it's something I didn't know about until a few years ago. It's a surname I've inherited by marrying exotically.
I see. Okay. All right. So you are in New Zealand, yes?
I am. Yes.
What part of New Zealand?
On the South Island, for those of you who know Lord of the Rings, a lot of the mountains in Lord of the Rings I can see very close to my home. So in the South Island, near the mountains, basically, on the West Coast.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it's beautiful there. I'm in South Florida in the U.S.
Uh-huh. So a little bit different to here.
A little bit different, right? But we're all in sort of the same boat right now, dealing with this coronavirus and staying at home. What is it like where you live? What are the orders? Are you ordered to stay at home? What's happening there?
Yeah, we're... We've got four levels that were introduced to us as a country. And so we're currently in the highest one, level four, which basically means stay at home. You can only go out for essential services or if you're an essential worker. So we're allowed to go out to do essential shopping, which is really just groceries, pharmacies, that kind of thing, doctor's appointments. And people who work in those services, they can work. Otherwise, we're meant to stay indoors. We're allowed to walk around our local area for exercise. I'm very lucky because I live by a lake. And so we can go for a walk and be in beautiful nature within 5 minutes. But we're not allowed to drive for fun. We're not allowed to go further afield. We're not allowed to visit anyone who doesn't live in the same house with us.
Wow.
They're reviewing that tomorrow. So we'll see. And if it does lessen tomorrow, there'll be a little bit more lessened. Leeway, but it will still be quite tight.
It is astounding what we've all been doing around the globe, you know, separately, yeah. but together. And so many of us have gotten very creative. Now, I discovered you, Shirley, on YouTube, I'm sure, as millions of others have. You have right. produced some of the most amazing videos, song parodies, all centered around COVID-19 and this quarantine time. What made you start doing these?
You know, it wasn't a planned thing at all. I've got a job that requires a lot of thinking during this time. I'm the principal of a small school.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so as we were leading up towards the lockdown, it all came very quickly. And so, you know, within less than half of a week, we were going from normal but nervous and trying to keep our distance to everyone being staying at home. And so the first Saturday of the lockdown, I knew that I needed to do something to get my mind off school, because otherwise you'll just keep thinking and working. And I knew I needed a mental break as well. And I've written songs on the side for years. I had been writing a song with lyrics based on Do Re Mi just the previous week anyway for a private client.
Right.
And one thing led to the other. Corona was on my mind. The Sound of Music was on my mind. And I needed to do something. My normal go-to, if I really need to relax and the weather's good, will be going for a kayak. Because like I said, I live on a lake, but we're not allowed to do that. So stuck inside, what do you do? So may as well write the song. And I did. And I did it purely for my own entertainment and just to de-stress myself. And I liked how it turned out. I only used the backing video because I was watching it to see how the harmony parts worked and things. And as I sang the song while watching the video, I thought, oh, they kind of fit quite fun together. So I did it that way, showed a couple of friends, shared it with one or two groups of educators on Facebook, and then it kind of went nuts from there. So I've sort of been sitting back laughing and been quite bemused at how this has spread far more than I expected.
Well, we've all been laughing too, thanks to you. And because this is a time when we need, you know, we're looking for entertainment and we want things that make us laugh. And I've been searching for my show. I try to start the program every day with a humorous video, a comedy bit, something, because I say we need to laugh now because things are going to get serious down the road. And I stumbled upon The Sound of Music. You did a couple of those, and then you branched out and did a couple of Wizard of Oz videos as well.
Yeah, I was so surprised by the amount of positive feedback that I had from the video, and a bunch of people commenting as well as contacting me privately, just to say that it really had cheered them up. And I thought, well, you know, I feel I've got my immediate work I need to do, continue from home. But if I can do anything to help people stay happy and smile a little bit without diminishing how important this whole situation is.
Right.
Why not? I've got the time. It helps me relax and it helps other people too. So it's a win-win all around as far as I'm concerned.
So you did these videos. So those were using the film, but you've done some on your own. You did one. And of course, I don't have it in front of me.
But I've done a takeoff of Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You.
Okay.
I've done Mr. Sandman.
That's
old
the one. The Mr. Sandman was the one I played the other day.
Yeah, yeah. Neil Sedaka's Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
Uh-huh.
I just put out yesterday a cover of the Oompa Loompa song from
I
the
thought. Wonderful.
In the Chocolate Factory. Yeah, and I've got about seven other ideas in my head that I'm working through. I'm trying not to do them all at once, just because I need to pay for myself as well.
Your profession, you said earlier, you're the principal of a small school. You're not a professional singer. You've got a wonderful voice, and the harmonies you're doing are incredible.
Thank you. I've been singing longer than I've been teaching, but I do it for entertainment, yeah.
And then I go to your website, which is shirleycan.com. And you're a photographer. But you write that that's not your full-time job, because your full-time job is as a principal of a school.
All these other things are creative outlets for me. And if I don't exercise my creative juices, as I'm sure many people would be, it's not good for me. And so photography is something I've always enjoyed, singing something I've always enjoyed, creating music, writing, all that. And yeah, if I can help people at the same time, great.
Oh, it's wonderful. And so here we are connecting across the world. We're talking. It's now Saturday night here in South Florida at 9:07 p.m. It's Sunday afternoon there.
It is. Yep. Yep. And you've got a rainy day to look forward to.
Ah, yeah. Good to know. Can you tell me what's going on? Oh, it's Sunday, so there's no stock market or anything happening. Just wondering if our dear leader is going to say anything really stupid tomorrow. But I guess you don't even have to be in the future to figure that out, because we know what the answer is.
Reserve comment.
I'm sorry?
I'll reserve comment on that one.
Okay. So how you have a wonderful young prime minister in New Zealand. Yes. How's she doing?
Yes. Jacinda Ardern, you know, I think despite what people think of the party politics, because you're always going to get back and forth with that, she has been praised by people on all sides for just how well she's handled this as a leader. One thing I really like is that she appears very approachable. She gives the impression that she really wants to communicate what she knows to us. We are very much all in this together. And I remember she did a live Facebook live video, and she was in her sweatshirt hoodie sitting in her room, and she just fed her daughter and, you know, was saying, oh, sorry if there's noises nearby, or stains down her top. So very relatable person. And, you know, this is not an easy situation for anybody to be in. But no. I really admire Jacinda Ardern for how she's leading us.
So she's doing a good job. I wish I could say the same here. Unfortunately, things are not so good. I have to ask you this, because I've connected with people in other countries as we're going through this quarantine period. I call it quarantine calling. I spoke with someone in Finland the other day, someone in Denmark, someone in Italy, someone in New South Wales, Australia, and now you in New Zealand. What happens if you get sick or you start getting symptoms, you feel like you need a test for COVID? How easy is it to get tested, and what's the procedure? What do you have to do in order to get medical care?
You know, I haven't got the symptoms yet myself, so I haven't looked too deeply into it, but I do know that there are testing centres all over the place. For people who live more rurally, it will involve more of a drive, but for travelling to get a test, that would be counted as essential travel, so that's no issue. I know in Greymouth, which is our nearest town centre, that's a half-hour drive away, I know where the testing centre is, and as far as I know, it's just a matter of turning up if you've got the symptoms, but you're meant to ring your GP first and get advice from them. But yeah, like I said, I haven't had to do it. Right. I don't know anyone who has.
That's good.
We've only got two active cases on the West Coast that I know of. It's too many, of course. And sure. through the country, I think we've got far lower numbers than many countries do. But we want to keep it that way, of course. And I think in the beginning we were looking at containing it and slow down that curve so the hospitals can cope. I think the talk is much more now about let's get rid of it in New Zealand and then be very careful with our borders that it doesn't come back in. Yeah, how possible that is, I don't know.
Is there any pushback? I mean, over here right now, all of a sudden in cities around the country, there are these protests popping up, egged on by right-wing conservative media, and they're saying, liberate, you know, whoever, and they want the lockdown ended. But we don't even have widespread testing over here. That's why I asked about testing. If you feel like you need a test, you get a test, right?
Oh, I can get one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. That's still not the case here. And then there's the question of billing. What does it cost when you go to the doctor?
Well, it depends which one you go to. The last time I went was, I think it was 18 New Zealand dollars, which is maybe 10 US, something like that. In New Zealand, we have a different system, of course, than the States.
Yes, everybody
if there's
does.
Anything that happens accidentally, whether you're New Zealand born resident or even visitor, we're covered by accident compensation, which basically means taking out suing completely. And you get free medical care for the results of that accident for as long as it's needed.
As it should be.
I'm very happy. Yeah.
Do you need health insurance? I mean, if you get sick, if you get cancer, or if you get COVID-19, or is there any worries about how you're going to pay for treatment?
No, not at all. No, if you're here, you'll be taken care of. A lot of people do have private health insurance, but it's not something that you have to have. I've had people in my immediate family whose lives have been saved multiple times through the public system and not paid a cent.
Wow. And do you feel that you're...
Long-term care, yeah.
Do you have long-term care, you just said?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yep, it covers the immediate, you know, hospital stay, the treatment, surgery, as well as, you know, ongoing things like radiation or follow-up visits, physiotherapy, all that sort of thing.
Right.
Yep.
And it's all included. And it's paid through your taxes, basically. Do you feel like your taxes are prohibitively high?
Nope. No, well, when you pay them and you know what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I mean, I'm not representative of all the views in New Zealand, of course.
Sure.
But I happen to really like it. Yeah.
It sounds wonderful. I'm very envious because, you know, there's a real problem over here with a lot of people who've been still go to work with symptoms because, number one, they can't afford not to because they don't go to work. They don't get paid. It's insane.
Sure.
And then
it's a difficult choice, I guess, for politicians to make, but you weigh up the cost of caring for someone extensively. And will that outweigh the longer term cost to the economy and to the country? And I think that the stance in New Zealand, as well as many other countries, I suppose like Scandinavia as well, they prefer to pay more to take care of people initially so that there's less cost long term.
Well, that's what makes sense. Unfortunately, we have a for-profit healthcare system over here, which is totally insane. I mean, so much of what goes on here is insane. I've been telling people who I speak to around the world that I apologize for the stuff coming out of Washington, D.C. these days. Most of us did not vote for him, and we're hoping that this November we can change things. I with everything in me, I want nothing more.
I just hope that in November we can be back to sitting in cafes with one another.
You and me both.
Children playing in the playground at school together without worry of these things. But, it's interesting, the long-term plans that we all have seem quite irrelevant now in some ways, don't they?
Absolutely.
I've never been more day-to-day in my thinking than I am now. And learning to be okay with that, because we have to be.
Right.
But you realize what's important as well, you know, the immediate relationships, the things that really matter, right?
Most definitely. And reaching out to people across the world, because I think that's important. This just shows what a small world it truly is.
So there's a new song I should take off. Yeah.
Absolutely. Please do, because I was going to use that, you know, music for a theme for this segment that I do, but it really is. The world's getting smaller and smaller. And Shirley, absolutely. I thank you so much for the great enjoyment you've given us. You're incredibly talented. I hope the students at your school get to share some of this great talent you're sharing with the rest of us.
I'd just like to see them again.
I'll bet. Shirley, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us. I really appreciate it. And I love your videos, as do my listeners.
Thank you very much. You have a good evening.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day. And there you have it. Shirley Chabon. I will post a couple of her videos on the blog at NicoleSandler.com, where I will post at least a portion of today's show, because the second half of the show is going to be a bonus for paid subscribers. I hate to do that because, you know, I don't put the show behind a paywall, but this is bonus material. So if you are a donor of the program, hopefully if it all works right, you'll have access. If not, just send me an email and I'll send you a link. That'll work. Okay. Cause you know, I don't know. I'm trying to feel my way through all this stuff. All right. There is news going on. And well, since I recorded What's News early this morning, there has been some new news. Most notably, the one thing that I'm still trying to figure out, I guess if we go out now and try to put gas in our car, they'll pay us. Because the price of a barrel of oil is in negative territory. For the first time ever, it hit zero. And then the last time I checked, it was like minus $3 a barrel. So I guess if you decide that you will buy a barrel of oil, they'll pay you $3 to take it. I don't quite understand this. But I would guess that, and this is what happens when Donald Trump says he's going to stabilize the oil market. And of course, the latest on the Dow is, let's see, it is down 586.45, in case you were wondering. Again, when you got nothing, you got nothing to lose. All right, so let's take a quick time out. We'll get the news. We'll come back on the other side with my friend Robert Platschorn, who spent 30 years in federal prison for smuggling marijuana in the 70s. I kid you not. And now he's the president of Normal in Florida. He heads up the Silver Tour, teaching senior citizens about the benefits of medical marijuana. And he's got some great stories to tell. So we'll at least get a story. Oh, oil is now $37 a barrel. Wow. So I guess it shot up. Thank you, Green Progress, in the YouTube chat room. So It's swinging wildly. I guess they won't pay you to fill up your car anymore. Oh, well. somebody got a bargain today. All right, here's the news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The death toll from the coronavirus rose above 40,000 in the U.S., the highest in the world, with more than 750,000 confirmed cases. Although the United States comprises only about 4% of the world's population, it now accounts for more than 30% of the world's total COVID-19 cases. A new round of funding for the government's small business relief program could be decided Monday. Congress is trying to agree on $300 billion of additional money for the Paycheck Protection Program, which was designed to provide loans to businesses closed by coronavirus restrictions.
Wait, I need to break in here. Hold on.
Small businesses were shut out as the initial $350 billion allocation was exhausted almost immediately.
All right, hold on. I got to break in here to tell you I got it wrong. I was reading from the YouTube chat room, which I thought it said $37 a barrel. It's not $37 a barrel. It's minus $37 a barrel. Minus $37 they pay you to take a barrel of oil? Okay. Hell has officially frozen over. Go fill your car. You'll get rich. That's how it should work, right? All right, back to the news.
And it was larger, quote, small businesses like Shake Shack and Ruth's Chris Steakhouse who landed multi-million dollar loans.
It took high-end steakhouse Ruth's Chris with 150 restaurants and more than 5,000 employees just days to get a $20 million loan from JPMorgan Chase. Funds from the $350 billion set aside to help small businesses make payroll. But it appears size matters. Paul Gattuso is struggling to keep Paul's Pizza and Hot Dogs open. The 38-year-old Westchester, Illinois restaurant has just 8 employees and is still waiting for word about its small business loan.
I can't do it much longer.
Democrats in Congress complain the program allows banks to prioritize existing customers, particularly those with large credit lines like Ruth's Chris, over small businesses or new applicants. Neil Borofsky oversaw the 2009 stimulus program during the Great Recession.
For the mom and pop, are they at the back of the line?
Frankly, until all the established bank customers get their loans, they may not even be on the line.
Shake Shack has agreed to return the $10 million loan they got. Lawmakers have also agreed to tuck $25 billion into the latest round of negotiations to fund more COVID-19 testing. U.S. governors, health experts, and White House officials are at odds over the next steps needed to reopen the country. Researchers have been very clear that there needs to be significantly higher rates of COVID testing to safely get people back to work. And governors have been pleading with the federal government for access to more tests in order to get the job done. However, during his Sunday propaganda TV session, Trump said testing is a local problem that the federal government shouldn't be handling. He also said the country was testing, quote, millions per day. The actual number is around 150,000. Now, governors from states that have been hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic pushed back on Trump's claim that they have enough tests to safely reopen their economies soon. During the White House briefing Saturday, Trump accused governors of failing to, quote, use all of the testing capacity we've created. He said Democrats were politicizing the issue of testing as part of an effort to convince Americans that he is mishandling the outbreak. All righty then.
If it were up to me, I'd take away the guns.
This time it was in Canada. A gunman went on a 12-hour killing spree in Nova Scotia on Sunday, killing at least 16 people in the deadliest shooting rampage in Canadian history. A police officer was among the dead. The 51-year-old shooter died in a standoff with police after a car chase. Police confirmed the gunman was dressed in a Royal Canadian Mounted Police uniform but was not an officer. Mass shootings are rare in Canada, which has much tighter gun control laws than the U.S. Well, gun nuts and idiots held a second day of weekend rallies on Sunday calling for reopening the economy despite the ongoing coronavirus outbreak.
In Phoenix, hundreds of cars cruise past the Arizona State Capitol, honking horns and waving flags in a demonstration called by Operation Gridlock Arizona to demand that state leaders lift a shelter-in-place order and let people return to work. These groups... Hold on a second. I really screwed something up. This is not supposed to be this way. Hold on. Let me get this back up and have going
cabin
good.
Fever and want their life back.
Now, despite Donald Trump's false claims to the contrary, staff members of the Centers for Disease Control and other U.S. public health experts who worked at the World Health Organization headquarters gave the administration real-time updates on the early spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus in China. This, according to a new report in the Washington Post on Sunday, citing American and foreign officials. The report undercut Trump's allegation that the WHO tried to protect China by withholding early information on the threat, contributing to the speed of its spread to the U.S. A spokesman confirmed to the Post that the Department of Health and Human Services had 17 staff members, 16 of them from the CDC, at the WHO, who were there working on a variety of programs, including COVID-19 and Ebola. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. Just click on that donate button. Ah, all right, I'm back. Hey, it's Nicole here. I'm trying to connect with our guest, Robert Platshorn. And we tested it earlier. Seriously, we did. And we had video working and everything, and it was all good. I see he's on the line, but I don't see video for you, Robert.
You should see it now.
No, I see your icon. Nope, no video.
The camera just went off.
Yeah, because I want to bring in your picture here so that people can see you when we're talking. So while we try to get this figured out, are you hitting the camera icon on your thing or
yes.
Just the phone? That's so weird because when we tried it earlier, it worked just fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
Uh-huh.
Which is why I wanted to try it because it's not always fine.
Looks
like it's on.
Do you see me, right? I don't see you. I don't
I
have
see
your video.
You just fine.
Hmm. All right, we may have to
just went off.
Okay. It's live radio. I don't know what's happening. You hit on the camera icon on your thing, yes?
Yeah, hit on it and hit whoop, now it went on.
All right, well, we're just going to have to do audio only, and I'll find a photo of you to put up because this if I see your video click on, I'll bring you in, but I don't see it. So Robert Platshorn is with us. We first met, God, it's got to be about 10. When did you get out of prison? How many years ago?
2008.
Oh, so it's over 10 years. So we met when you were first released from prison. As I was explaining to the listeners, you have the distinction of being the person who served the longest federal sentence for a nonviolent marijuana charge in U.S. history?
Yes, at the time I was. Now there's two or three people who've been in even over 30 years.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. There are still quite a few marijuana prisoners with endless sentences and still thousands with 10 and 15 year sentences.
That's crazy. It's just, it's nuts. And you know, it should be different. It should be, marijuana should be legal by now. And in fact, Bernie Sanders, that was part of his platform. Joe Biden is not for legalization of marijuana, but I don't think he has any say in the matter at this point.
He's coming around. He has stated categorically that he is for decriminalizing it and putting serious money into research, which is something we've been lacking for a long time. Joe changes to tend to change with the times. He's always fairly represented his constituency. And back in the day, the country was for Punishem.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's different, and so is he.
Yeah, well.
Bernie would have given us legalization if he could have passed it. Unfortunately, the chance of him finding enough votes for almost any of his agenda would have been terrible.
Probably.
Because he's never had that support.
Well, we could talk about that another day. I want to talk about today's 420. So, you know, I found this whole thing about, the origins of the term 420. And some people say that it came from the California Criminal Code, that 420 was the code for someone smoking pot. That's not true. The state California's 420 code actually applies to obstructing entry on public land. It's not the legend of a police radio code either. Or it's not from a Dylan song. Apparently there was a group of high school kids in Marin County, California, who called themselves the Waldos, who would meet at 4:20 in the afternoon to get high. And that's where all of a sudden 4:20 took off. And now it's sort of the code for smoking weed. That wasn't the case, Robert, when you were arrested back. What year were you arrested?
1979.
Wow. And so tell us what happened here. You were working with a group of people and bringing pot into South Florida?
Yes, I was.
And?
We called ourselves the Fishing Fools. The government decided that black tuna sounded more ominous.
Okay. So that was a government...
We were a bunch of fish together, and we would sometimes bring back a load of Santa Marta Gold, probably the best cannabis that ever came into this country.
Okay.
Or one of the best. It became the mother strain for all the good medical strains around today.
Okay, so I grew up in South Florida in the 70s and we smoked a lot of pot. But it was, it was different than what's out today. I mean, we had a lot of the Colombian gold buds were a big deal down here. Jamaican and Mexican were kind of the ragweed. That was the crappy stuff. You were bringing in the good stuff from Colombia, yes?
Yeah, we brought in almost all of the Santa Marta gold that did come in. There was a limited amount grown because Santa Marta was a built-up area. So whatever came out of the ground there, we pretty much got. I was willing to pay more for it because it was just outstanding. And we ended up doing a few plane loads and a few boat loads.
So how did you get busted?
Not the 3 million pounds we're credited with.
Okay, now that's what I was going to ask you, because when you were busted, they charged you with bringing in an inordinate amount of weed, and you said you were nowhere near that. So tell us what happened. You were targeted by the feds?
Yeah. At the time, the FBI was no longer hunting communists, and their main function was to prevent industrial espionage, not too exciting. And so they formed a joint task force with the DEA. It was perfect for both of them. DEA, because they had been such a corrupt agency, had no arrest powers. FBI was looking for glory, and they weren't going to find it in industrial espionage. So they started the first joint task force, and it was called Operation Bonko. They put a lot of money into publicity, saying that they were going to interrupt the banking chain and investigate the chain of millions and millions that were going over to Colombia. But when all was said and done, all they had was the black tunas, because most of the money that was being transferred to Colombia was from smuggles done by CIA agency, the Cubans, who were trying to finance a revolution again against Castro.
Wow.
So all they ended up with, after spending, at that time they admitted to $7 million on the investigation and indictment, they ended up with the black tunas, and they made us into something we weren't. But today I turn lemons into lemonade.
Right.
I don't look back at it. And I'm thrilled with what's been happening in this country for legalization. We're almost there.
Well, in the 10 years since you've been out, by the way, you adopted the name Bobby Tuna. At Bobby Tuna is your Twitter handle. The Black Tuna Gang, you wrote a book about it. You are featured in the movie Square Grouper that tells your story. You became larger than life. But the fact remains, Robert, that you were targeted by the feds back in 1979. You were arrested. You were sentenced to 60 how many years in prison?
64 years.
Wow. And
33 of it was non-parolable. And when I finished the 33, I was long past parole eligibility on the rest of the sentence. So I got immediate parole because I was a good guy anyway.
Right. So you served 33 years in federal prison after being arrested here in South Florida back in 1979 for smuggling pot. How much were you bringing in and what did they charge you with?
I was charged with about 1 million pounds.
Oh my God.
They claimed it might have been as much as 3 million pounds. And the reality, and it's all in my book, was about 100,000 pounds, a little under. That's a lot of weed, but
yes,
it certainly
but it's not
isn't
millions
a million,
of pounds.
3 million pounds.
Right. Well, the book is called The Black Tuna Diaries. It is available. You can find Robert Platschorn on Facebook and as I said, Bobby Tuna on Twitter. And I'll put links and a link to where you can get the book and find out more about the Silver Tour and all that stuff. So you came out of prison and you reinvented yourself. You started up the Silver Tour. And in fact, that's when we first met because I thought it was such a unique idea that you're going around and speaking. We're in South Florida, of course, there's lots of retirement communities, and you would speak to clubhouses filled with retirees about the benefits of medical marijuana. And in fact, your background before you went to prison back in the late 70s, early 80s, you were a TV pitch man. You were like the Popeil pocket fisherman guy. So you're a pitch guy. And so you did an infomercial that I was honored to be your narrator on Should Grandma Smoke Pot? And that's still available, by the way. You can look on YouTube for Should Grandma Smoke Pot, and you'll find this video that 12 years ago, I guess, already we did that, huh? Or 10,
yeah,
thereabouts.
A little over 10.
Yeah.
But it had a great effect. I mean, the first time we tried to pass medical in Florida, it just barely failed. And the answer was the senior vote. So we stepped up the Silver Tour. We ran Grandma at least 200 times that half hour show with you narrating. And we did 8,000 radio spots,
wow,
half of which you recorded.
Yeah, I did.
And we overwhelmingly got the senior vote. The difference was the Silver Tour. And boy, did that make me feel good after 30 years in prison.
I'll bet. And now you're also...
I'm glad I'm not there now.
And now you're also working with, the legalization process. We have medical marijuana in Florida, finally. Thank you. Thank you for your efforts, Robert Platschorn. Now we're working on getting recreational on the ballot. It will not be on the ballot, though, in November. We didn't get that, huh?
No, and I'll tell you what's happening a little bit behind the scenes now.
Okay.
We were waiting like 8 or 9 weeks ago for a decision from the Supreme Court whether our amendment would qualify under Florida law to be on the ballot. That was going to be the last step. And it was delayed. It was delayed. There was another one that was actually decided on, MedMen's amendment, and denied. But they stalled on ours. And now the Florida legislature, the Republicans, are trying to block it ever being on the ballot by saying it violates these new regulations that have come out of the corona emergency.
What?
That's some pretty far out legal thinking, and we don't think they'll prevail. But there's still that effort in the Florida legislature to keep us from getting recreational marijuana. And recreational marijuana will make medical marijuana available to millions more who just can't afford to get their card or don't have a doctor that's qualified to give them their card. But they're fighting it. And that's strange in a tourist state that's losing money hand over fist to Colorado, California, Washington, Oregon, Michigan, and all of New England now. It's just amazing.
It is amazing. Well, Florida has always been backwards. Are you now the president of Florida chapter of Normal?
No, I'm a board member.
Okay.
I'm on the board of directors of Normal of Florida.
Gotcha. All right. So you are also now starting, you're going to branch out. You tell stories. You've got tons of stories from your days of bringing in marijuana to the States. And I'm sure from your time, 30 plus years in federal prison. So you're starting a podcast where you're going to tell some of the stories. Tell us one of your favorite stories about you choose. What's one of your favorite stories?
I'll tell you a relevant story.
Okay.
About what happens when you're ill in jail.
Ah, well, this is something.
Then I'll give you, or if you want first, I'll give you an overview of how it works. But I'll tell you a little story.
Okay.
I was in FCI Otisville in New York. It's upstate New York. And it was early in my sentence. At the time, the prisons weren't terribly overcrowded, so they had two-man cells. And these cells in Otisville, it was a new prison. It was actually, I think, built for the Winter Olympics or something like that. Any case, two men to a room. And these rooms had solid doors, but they had a port that the guard could open and look in or pass you a tray. And there was about 2 inches on the bottom between the door and the floor, which was your only air circulation. They never bothered to build air returns in prison. Anyway, about an hour after lockdown, which was at 10 o'clock, I hear banging on the door next door to my cell. And the guy's screaming for the guard. Now, there's supposed to be one guard left in every cell house, like for 150 people. But there's usually only one guard for 200 cell houses. So you don't know where he is or whether he's awake or asleep. The guard finally comes to stop the banging on the door. And he said, look, and this guy happened to be a dentist. He said, I'm having a heart event.
Oi,
oi. Said, I need my medication. If I don't get it, I am going to die. I'm a doctor. I know what I'm talking about. So the guard said, I'll try and get a PA or a doctor right away. He makes the call, comes back, and says, there's only a PA on duty, and it's late at night. He says, take a couple aspirins, and the guy will come over in the morning.
Oh, God.
And this guy was only in his early 30s. He had a young family in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. He was a terrific guy. He tried to help all the inmates. In any case, what he does, he's lying on the floor, which is the only place he can get enough air to breathe. And his cellmate keeps trying to get the doctor or somebody over, and they just won't come. So he writes out his will. And he takes off his wedding ring, and he leaves it all there for his roommate. And he died right there on the floor.
Oh, my God. That's
the story.
Oh, my God.
Guy in his early 30s. Not unusual. I saw it many times. But what's worse is now the prison system is so overcrowded. You're living in a dormitory with beds only 3 or 4 feet apart.
Yep.
They're double bunks. There is no place to go to quarantine people. The infirmaries in prison rarely have more than two little bedrooms where they could hold you till an ambulance comes. Most prisons often do not have a doctor. Doctors, they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Doctors don't want to work in prisons. So I've been in a prison where it was 9 or 10 months where there just was no doctor. Thank God for some good nurses and PAs, but you can be sure there are no ventilators in prisons.
Yep. Yep.
Unless maybe it's the prison hospital in Springfield, Missouri, where they send you to die. It's usually a one-way trip if they got to send you to Springfield. There's no way to get away from the crowd. There are no empty rooms. I've been in prisons where there were 20 or 30 double bunks in a small hallway. Of course, the Bureau of Prisons always says, well, it's temporary. They're in transit. When I went into the system, there were about 25 prisons, federal. Today, there's 122.
Wow.
And there's not one of them that's not overcrowded.
And now with the COVID, with the coronavirus spreading, they are talking about releasing some prisoners. Hey, Michael Cohen, Trump's ex-attorney, is going to get out and be able to serve the remainder of his sentence at home. But there are millions of people incarcerated around the country who have no recourse, who are stuck, and they can't get out.
They're releasing some people from the lower prisons, from the camps. But it's not going to make room in the big prisons, the penitentiaries, the high-level FCIs. They're just afraid to let somebody out in case somebody commits a crime. And
right.
The Bureau of Prisons will always err on the side of being conservative. They're not going to give somebody a break unless they absolutely have to. It's just unimaginable. I've been in those places when they lock down, either for a virus pandemic or for security reasons or after 9/11. All lockdowns are exactly the same. You are locked in your unit with everybody who's in your unit and one guard if they can find one. Meals are usually delivered in a bag or a box.
Aye.
And you don't get out of that room.
No, look, yep.
Within a couple days, you hit this thing that's called, I got nothing to lose. And when you have 100 convicts in a room who are scared to death because half of them are sick, you got to the point where I have nothing to lose. And then the real problem, they've already begun. There have been prison riots already.
Sure, of course. I can't even imagine. I mean, I don't know if you remember. I know some of the listeners do. It was back in like 2011, I think, when I went to a town hall meeting, or what was supposed to be a town hall meeting, with my then congressman, Alan West, and tried to ask him a question about his vote for privatizing Medicare. And for my troubles, I got arrested. And because I told a guard he owed a few of us an apology for locking us in a room and forgetting about us, making a long story very short, I was put in a cell by myself in solitary confinement and couldn't get out. And after a night of no sleep and being stuck in a room where you cannot get out and you're at someone else's mercy, I was freaked out. And I was only there for a few hours. I mean, I was there overnight, but I was in this room for a few hours. I can't imagine being locked up for years and having no recourse.
I did 3.5 years in what they call special housing, solitary.
No, why?
To me, it was a way to get away from everything. And it was where you felt safe for a while because you weren't part of the violence that was going on. You weren't subject to a sneak attack somewhere. And if you could get books to read, you were in good shape.
Wow.
And I could usually get a little cannabis as well.
Really?
So
even while you were in prison?
Solitary.
Oh, yeah.
But I've seen people go nuts. They just got so lonely.
I'll bet. Unbelievable. Do you still talk to anybody that you were incarcerated with?
Yeah, I hear from quite a few people. They like to keep in touch with me. I know there's still a lot of desperate pot prisoners who should have been released.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out here working hard to get them released, but they don't seem in any hurry.
Wow. Well, that sucks. No, there are too many people in prison serving time all over the country for nonviolent offenses. Of course, marijuana convictions are ridiculous, and especially as the laws are being loosened around the country in many places, as we've talked, it's legal for recreational use. And in places where it's not, you know, in many cases, there's medical marijuana. The fact that it's still, you know, when you go to a dispensary to get the legal weed, that you have to pay in cash or with one, I guess, a Canna card or something, because you still can't, the banking industry can't work with the cannabis industry. That's still a thing.
Well, the banking industry is still afraid, but the fact is, I don't know of a dispensary that doesn't bank.
Right.
Of course, there's one problem. As soon as it becomes public knowledge, the bank closes everybody out.
Oh, my God.
I've seen it. I have a good friend in Michigan who's got a beautiful dispensary in Ann Arbor, and he's always been able to find a bank, but as soon as it became news that they were taking that kind of money, the banks would close all the dispensaries out and they'd go to another bank. But they're still handling cash in a dangerous way. And there's still robberies that wouldn't happen if they could bank normally. It's coming. There's a big push right now in Congress. It certainly isn't a priority with everything that's going on.
No.
But there is a big push. The Republicans would like them to get banking. Of course, the banks would like it. You're talking about billions and billions of dollars every year now from an industry that's essentially legal.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time, and they need to get with the program. Hopefully in November, if we have an election, if we're still here in November, things will change. But we got our work cut out for us. So how can people get involved with what you're doing, Robert? They can obviously find the Silver Tour at thesilvertour.org. Events are on hold now, of course.
That's it. I get emails every day through the website, and then I answer them from my own email, and people have my email. I hear from people all the time. We're trying to keep Silver Tour going. I want to go back on radio and TV since we can't hold 300 and 400 people Silver Tour shows, which is what I really love doing. I'm an old ham. I love to get up in front of a few hundred people, educate them, talk, tell stories. I miss that, but I'd like to put Grandma back on and do the radio. I'm talking to my sponsor, Trulieve, to continue to sponsor the Silver Tour. They've been fabulous, and hopefully we'll be back on the air and back on TV soon.
Well, I hope so. And in the meantime, people can find you on Facebook. It's Robert.Platschorn. You're on Twitter at Bobby Tuna, thesilvertour.org. Anything else they need to know? And where can they find the Black Tuna Diaries?
Silvertour.org. Go to the store page.
Okay. And I'll put links to all that on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's show. Well, happy 420 day. Obviously, we're all stuck at home. You doing anything special to celebrate today?
Well, I just smoked the last teeny piece of a nug from the Black Tuna Gold.
Wow.
It's a secret strain. Can't talk too much about it, but it's coming.
Really?
I did the beta test, and it is so like the Santa Marta Gold I used to bring in that people are just going to num, delicious, love it.
Okay.
It's that good, but I'm sworn to secrecy about when and how.
Okay, well, when this all ends, when our quarantine is lifted, can I be invited to a sampling party?
You absolutely can. You're invited to anything I do. Oh. I love when you show up. I love seeing you.
Thank you so much. Robert Platschorn, it's great to talk to you. I couldn't think of anyone else I'd rather talk to on 420. So thank you for spending some of your day with us.
Thank you for helping me make it a special day.
You got it. All right. Great talking to you. And hopefully when this blows over, we have a date.
We have a date for sure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Robert Platschorn, Bobby Tuna. Again, there's a movie that is called Square Grouper. His story is one of the, I think, three stories featured. While you're shut in, go do a search for it on YouTube or whatever and watch it. It's certainly informative and very interesting. All right. So I told you today is we're doing something a little different today. I would, I'd stay on YouTube and segue into the musical portion of the program. But you know what happens when I play music on YouTube? I get copyright violated and then they block the video worldwide. So I'm going to shut off the YouTube stream. We're going to shut off the camera. We're going to go to audio only. So come on over. You can either go to the streaming page at NicoleSandler.com, which is NicoleSandler.com/listen-live, or this is new. You can simply go to NicoleSandlerStream.com and it'll bring up the audio stream. Because we're going to segue to the musical portion of the program. So I'm going to say bye YouTube and bye Facebook Live, because we've been on Facebook Live as well. Facebook, I got to tell you, is even worse than YouTube when it comes to copyright violations. So we'll end the video portion of the program. But, you know, I spent the majority of my radio career doing music radio. And as I said at the beginning of the show, what I want to do, I have a set of music that I like to go to when I need inspiration, when I need to feel good, when I'm feeling down and we need something to pick us up. So the power of positive singing, you know. So I've got some of those songs that I thought I would mix in with the standard, yeah, it's 420 day, so let's go get stoned, right? All right, so we'll do that, and I'll say goodbye to the video portion of our programming. Come join us at NicoleSandlerStream.com or NicoleSandler.com/listen-live, because, we got to move on and do this. Bye, video people. We'll leave you with Toby Keith.
I always heard that his herb was top shelf, and Lord, I just could not wait to find out for myself.
Well, don't knock it till you tried it, and I've tried it, my friend. I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
Now we learned a hard lesson in a small Texas town.
He fired up a fat boy and he passed it around.
And the last words I spoke before they tucked me in,
I may discount bungee jump, but I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
I'll never smoke weed Willie again. My party's all over before it began. Now you can pour me some old whiskey river, my friend, but I'll never smoke weed with Willie again. We hopped on his old bus, the honeysuckle rose.
Party was Huntsville, it was after the show.
Alone in the front lounge, just me and him.
I took one friendly puff, and the grim creeper set in.
I'll never smoke weed with Willie again. My party's all over before it began. Now you can pour me some old whiskey river, my friend, but I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
Let's go down to Texas, guy.
Now we're passing the guitar, we're telling good jokes.
I can tell one's a-coming, cause I'm smelling smoke. No, I do not partake, I just let it pass by. With a grin on my face and a great contact high, I'll never smoke weed with Willie again. My party's all over before it began. And you can pour me some old whiskey river, my friend, but I'll never smoke weed with Willie again. In the fetal position, with drool on our chin, we broke down and smoked weed with Willie.